Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with Charlie Goldsmith, and we are here to recap the Bengals' impressive win in Detroit. I guess you can say the second half was impressive. The Bengals going into this game needing to win were the better team on paper, and they did so in an impressive fashion in the second half. Charlie, what are your initial takes just right off the bat?
Watching the Bengals as long as I have, I've seen a lot of blowout losses. Often the Bengals have been on the other end of that. But every time, with very, very few exceptions, it's always been a very good team that has been the one beating the Bengals by 24, 27, or 30 points. It's been teams like the Ravens and the Steelers and the Chiefs. And this time the Bengals did it. And even though it was against the Lions defense missing most of their best players with virtually no wide receivers and no passing game to speak of, the Bengals still did it. And as you know, watching the Bengals over the last 5, 20, 40 years, that takes something to beat a team the way the Bengals just did.
Yeah, and I mean, here's the deal with the Bengals. They're 4-2, and you can argue, have they really played anyone? Yes, they were supposed to beat Detroit. They were supposed to beat Jacksonville. They beat up a banged-up Steelers team that didn't have T.J. Watt, and is Big Ben a shell of himself? Then they beat the Detroit Lions. At the end of the day, they're 4-2, and they're competing for a spot, the number one spot in the AFC North, and they look like a team that can be in postseason contention if they continue to play how they did in the second half. The biggest takeaway that I have following this game is, when are the Bengals going to be able to put a full game together on offense? I have no questions about what Cincinnati's defense can do. They almost shut the Lions offense completely out if it weren't for that field goal. But offensively, they can look really great sometimes with the explosive plays of Ja'Marr Chase, but they can also look really bad. And that's what Zach Taylor, you know, is frustrated with following the game. He said, "I was really mad at halftime because the Bengals were only up 10-0 and they couldn't really string together any drives that looked like they had any rhythm." So before we kind of get into, you know, how do the Bengals go about putting more of a complete game together, let's talk about some of the highlights today. In my opinion, Joe Mixon, you know, having almost 100 rushing yards and getting that pick-me-up play from Chris Evans was a big bonus for this team. The Ja'Marr Chase continues to make explosive plays is something that I'd also like to point out. From your standpoint, when you look at the offense, what did you like about today's game, Charlie?
Ja'Marr Chase is just a game changer. The Bengals had that with A.J. Green for about 8 seasons. And the thing that you can forget, though, is how difficult it is to find that in the NFL, to find someone who can flip a game with one play. That's exactly what Chase has done. Basically, every single game, his ability to flip a game with one play is something Zach Taylor said you can't scheme against. It's the combination, too. Chase is showing new qualities. You know, last week it was the back shoulder catch that he made twice, that twice put the Bengals in a better position to win. Today, it was like that tight window he was able to make that catch in. The ability to track the ball through hands out in front of him was something that really stood out to me. And at a time where nothing almost, it felt, was going right for the Bengals offense, they just said, you know what, let's get Ja'Marr Chase the ball. And it worked. And it's really hard in the NFL at this level to almost do exactly what you want and to create a plan and just have it work. And with Ja'Marr Chase in every game, specifically at the end of first halves, that plan, it just works.
Yeah, it's funny to me, and I even asked him following the game, I said, are you surprised that no one has been able to take you away at the end of a first half? Because we've now watched every single game, and we're sitting in the press box like, it's about that time for Joe Burrow to hit Ja'Marr Chase for a deep ball. And I thought his answer was perfect. You know, he really doesn't look at it as, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop, like I'm waiting for someone to try and take me away. They tried to take him away, but he's just trying to do what he can do, and he's able to beat his man, and his connection is so strong with Joe Burrow that, like you said, Charlie, it just works, and he's been terrific. And I thought today, especially with the way Trey Hendrickson made Penei Sewell look, and I know you wrote something about this following the game, but he sure made it look like they made the right decision taking him over Penei Sewell, because he's just been outstanding for this team. And really, he's the spark guy for this team. Joe Burrow said as much following the game. He said, Jamar Chase is our spark guy. Their connection is strong. And yes, they have T. Higgins. And yes, the Bengals have Tyler Boyd and Joe Mixon. But Jamar Chase has emerged as the guy in this offense.
There's a Joe Burrow factor to this, too. So in that drive right before halftime where Jamar Chase ended up catching the ball that set up the field goal, the Lions had a high safety specifically shade over to Chase on every single play until third down. The Lions thought they were going to catch the Bengals off guard. They said, you know what? We're going to blitz instead. They sent pressure, and Burrow said after the game, that was exactly the look they were waiting for. The fact that they recognized that and executed that in such a crucial part of the game, I mean, that's just another example of how really Jamar Chase is Burrow's go-to receiver now. Look through who on third down and who in the highest leverage situations Joe Burrow is throwing the ball to. It's Jamar Chase, and it's translating in every area.
It'll be interesting next week, and we'll talk about this more on next week's episode of Bengals Beat Podcast previewing the Ravens game. But I think the Ravens are the first defense where they've got a corner in Marlon Humphreys that can really try and cover Jamar Chase. We'll see, because defenses are trying to take him away, and he just keeps beating them. So we'll see how the Ravens try and play that. But he's been as consistent and as good as I think anyone could have expected him to be 6 games into the season. I also want to talk to you, Charlie, about the right guard situation. But before we move on to the defensive performance, the Bengals decided to start Trey Hill at right guard because Jackson Carmen was placed on the reserve COVID list last Monday. He was able to be activated because he passed 2 COVID tests within 24 hours. So he was able to get activated on Friday, but Zach Taylor said he might have just missed too much practice that they didn't feel comfortable giving him the start. And I don't know if you felt this, Charlie, but I almost felt like they wanted to see what they had in Trey Hill, and that's why they gave him the start. Because Jackson Carmen hasn't, you know, really played all that well. Obviously, he's a rookie, and you're expected to go through some lulls as a rookie. But when you go through each game, he in particular has not been great on the interior on that right side. But then they put Trey Hill in, and they couldn't get him out of the game fast enough, came in and had 2 costly penalties, and right to the bench he went. And Jackson Carmen came back in and was unable to finish the game. With an illness, we'll know more about that later, but right guard, with Xavier Suofilo being on injured reserve, I know they're going to get him back, but the right guard position for this offensive line is where I've got some questions, and things could get a little dicey here if they suffer another injury, because we saw what type of depth they have, and it's not great.
That's very important to bring up, too, because we were just talking about Chase and the bet that they made that of what that could do for the offense. That's paying off. That's right. But still, the trade-off that they took is that they would be weaker at guard. And frankly, my takeaway right now after watching Trey Hill and watching also Jackson Carmen over the course of the season is the Bengals have not just very little margin for error, but very, very little depth. Remember, Jackson Carmen's the guy who, when I broke down every single third down, Carmen in just 3 games was responsible for more failed third downs than anyone else on the Bengals because he allowed a sack or pressure, committed a holding penalty or something like that. Then they bring in Trey Hill, who today, as you said, we don't need to go snap by snap, but today Trey Hill was not a starting level guard. And then the other part of this too is Trey Hopkins, who behind Carmen was 2nd for most third down faults, has also graded out low this season, lower than he has in previous years of his career. Hopkins, someone who was getting evaluated at one point of the game on the sideline. Hopkins, someone who's coming off an ACL injury. And also Hopkins, someone who, you know, the replacement for him would be Trey Hill, who we saw today struggling. So for as much as the Bengals offensive line continues to be a factor, it's not like they have an easy fix with Deontay Smith on IR, with what we saw from Trey Hill today. Then the next guy in line is Fred Johnson, who they've been reluctant to play all season.
Well, and the reason it's not an easy fix is because a lot of people, including media members and probably the Bengals, said, I feel better about the Jamar pick because you drafted Jackson Carmen in the second round, hoping he would be a legit starter, and he has not been what they need him to be, which is why it's something worth, you know, keeping an eye on, because even when Xavier Suofilo comes back, he wasn't playing great either. So they've got some questions that they need to get answered, but none of them come as easy answers at right guard. The tackles are playing good, and Jonah Williams has had a very good bounce back kind of season here now that he's healthy, and Riley Reiff just does his job. So from that standpoint, it's good, and it was nice to see them kind of get some push for Joe Mixon to get going. And let's talk about, since we're talking about the offensive line and now the run game, let's talk about Chris Evans, a standout performance for the rookie sixth round pick out of Michigan today, with Samaje Perine also, in addition to Jackson Carmen, being placed on the reserve COVID list. Perine was placed on the reserve COVID list on Monday, and he wasn't able to get back for this game. So Chris Evans got more carries, and he made the most of his opportunity, and he got his first career NFL touchdown. And even more importantly, Charlie, and I know you'll talk about this because we talked about this before, but he was great in pass protection and the blitz he picked up. Joe Burrow and Zach Taylor both mentioned in their post-game press conferences that it was a huge play for Evans to come in and pick up that safety blitz, and it led to Joe being able to hit Jamar for that explosive play. And that, we've talked about it, the pass protection for the running backs has been a liability for this team. And who knows, now maybe Chris Evans can be some of the answers to what the Bengals need in terms of better pass protection for Joe Burrow, right?
This hasn't been the biggest issue with the Bengals over the last five seasons, but something that's been very noticeable is that their depth at the skill positions just hasn't been there. They've had to get guys at wide receiver and running back and tight end playing out of position in new roles and more expanded roles that maybe doesn't fit their skill set. And they haven't had this problem this season. It's the contrary. At wide receiver, I've seen them scheme up plays for Auden Tate and Trent Irwin. At tight end, even though he's the starter, for the first time, really, the Bengals are making CJ Uzomah featured on plays sometimes. And then at running back, of course, the Bengals can do things with Chris Evans at running back that they couldn't do with Joe Mixon or Giovanni Bernard at running back. He can do things at running back that they haven't really had since Rex Burkhead, and Evans's hands and his strength catching the ball is probably better than Burkhead's as well. You know, you were saying that the pass protection was the last step the Bengals needed to see. They need their running backs to protect Burrow when they go in 11. And Evans did that today with the best block I've ever seen him make. College, training camp, preseason, anytime. So the fact that the Bengals have pages in their playbook for guys that aren't the main guys, and they still have the talent they have at the starting skill position spots as well, That's just something else the Bengals have, another layer to an overall offense that's been successful.
Well, before we move on from Evans, I want to ask you a question, because you were able to watch him in college, and when he was drafted, you were covering the Bengals. I wasn't here yet. What do you think is the reason why Evans didn't beat out Perine in training camp to get that number two spot? Because Zach Taylor said following the game, no, I'm not surprised at the way Chris Evans played, because he said he was making these types of plays all of camp. So I'm just wondering why he didn't beat Samaje Perine out on the depth chart.
He was making those plays throughout camp. And so here's where it's really interesting that you bring that up, because last week against Green Bay, Perine, I think, was second on the team in targets, had a ton of receiving yards, had a touchdown catch. And I remember thinking, this is a lot of Samaje Perine. I think my guess would be that they had more faith in the difference, I guess, between Perine's pass catching. I think they thought Perine's pass catching was better than Evans's pass protection ability. And it was almost that while Perine might have the lower ceiling offensively, he can give you the higher floor because of that. He's a veteran who came into the season with a better understanding of the scheme. So all of those factors probably go into play. This is the very interesting part. Are you able to raise the ceiling of the offense with more Chris Evans snaps? Because even more than Joe Mixon, Evans can be just a dynamic part of the offense. Joe Mixon can't make that catch Chris Evans made today, and neither can Samaje Perine. So, again, will Samaje Perine continue to earn himself reps? It's pass protection. I think that's just what it's been all along.
Yeah, and I mean, if anything, even if it's Chris Evans that gets a better Samaje Perine out of him. But Samaje Perine had some pretty bad whiffs in terms of pass protection. So I'm very interested to see if next week in Baltimore, if we continue to see more Chris Evans, because he made the plays when they mattered today. And that's what it's about in the NFL. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a sixth round pick. When you get in there, if you make the plays that they need you to make, you earn more playing time. And that's exactly what Joe Burrow said. He said if he continues to play like he did today, he's going to get more snaps. So we could definitely see more Chris Evans in the Bengals offense next week. But let's talk about the defensive performance today, because I feel like we spend so much time talking about Joe Burrow and the offensive weapons that the Bengals have, and rightfully so, but this defense has yet to let this team down in terms of a full game. Yeah, they've had some bad moments. Green Bay kind of exposed some things, but again, Davante Adams is the best wide receiver, and Aaron Rodgers can make anybody look like they're having a bad day, but when the Bengals offense wasn't rolling, it was Cincinnati's defense that continues to keep them in games. And you can tell they take a lot of pride in being that unit that does so. And it's led by, I think we can highlight three people, and I'm wondering if these would be the three people you would highlight too. Up front, Trey Hendrickson, linebacker, Logan Wilson, and in the second level at corner, Cheeto. I think they're covered with at least one kind of game wrecker on all levels on the defense, and I think that's what's making them such a good unit week in and week out.
So it's funny you put it that way, because those three plus Jesse Bates are are the corn mama. That's exactly the story I'm writing tonight, that the Bengals finally have a core, which they hadn't since the mid-2010s when they were a playoff contender. The most surprising, the thing that gives me the most confidence that this will be consistent is that it's the same guys making plays every game. It's not like like we've seen in this defense. You know, Darius Phillips will have a one or two game stretch where he gets a couple interceptions. That happened in 19 and 20. You'll see pass rushers put together a two or three game stretch and then fall off over the course of the season. We've seen a lot of that at a lot of different positions. But through the first 6 weeks of the season, with the exception of the games that Awuzie and Bates missed, I mean, you can say that they've been their best players. Not just that, like, they've been the podium guys. And there's something to that. The players who do enough to speak to the media after the game, like, that's a status symbol. And the fact that it's the same guys getting that recognition and earning that recognition with how they play on the field, that's what gives me confidence that the defense can be more consistent and build off what they've shown over the first 6 weeks.
Yep, and you're right to bring up Jesse Bates, because obviously I named those three guys, but he's a huge part of it as well. But Logan Wilson, 4 interceptions. He is playing as good as any middle linebacker in the NFL. Obviously, Von Bell playing a huge role in that interception by Logan Wilson. But it's not that Logan Wilson just lucks into these plays that he's making. He is in the right spot at the right time, and that is because he is dedicated to his film study. I thought it was very interesting, and I'd like to do a deeper dive on this, but it was funny when I think it was maybe Jesse Bates or someone that said Logan Wilson does the same thing every day. He eats his lunch made by his girlfriend, and he watches film. At the same time, he just seems like one of those guys that's a creature of his habit, and he takes his workday so seriously, and you're seeing the benefits from it because it's only his second year, and offenses are going to now know don't throw the ball near Logan Wilson, and he's going to be a part of a game plan, which I don't think any of us thought he would be the game wrecker for Cincinnati's defense.
I think Wilson's such an interesting story. Like, we'll see what his ceiling ends up being, but in so many ways, he's a modern linebacker. The story is, he played defensive back his entire high school career. He was an inside receiver as well. Gets recruited as a safety. Coach sees him make a hit and goes, you know what? He might be a linebacker if we can get him to add 50 pounds, which Logan Wilson does. And now, though, he's a linebacker with understanding of route concepts, with understanding of zone schemes. Someone who is as natural doing that as anything on a football field. I'm not comparing him to one of these guys, but it's like in the NBA when someone's like 6'3" and then they become 6'11" and they're still like, they can still dribble the ball and pass and shoot because that's who they used to be. That's exactly who Logan Wilson is. He used to be a safety who had to cover to make a football career. And now he's doing that at 240 pounds as a linebacker. There's a real parallel there. And that's what makes him such an interesting player in the modern game.
That's a good analogy. Or you could look at it as the big man who's really good in defense, really good at rebounding, who can finally learn how to shoot the three. And then he just becomes that much more of a part of what you're trying to do. So that's Logan Wilson. And I wrote about it following the game, but Trey Hendrickson, 4.5 sacks for this guy on the year. He actually ranks in the top 10 of sacks in the NFL. I think Myles Garrett, and this was before the Browns-Cardinals game, Myles Garrett was leading the NFL with 7 sacks. But the reason I want to bring up Trey Hendrickson is I have covered a season where Vic Beasley was the NFL sack leader with 15.5 sacks in 2016. It is so hard to replicate a year following a year in which you have 13.5 sacks, in which Trey Hendrickson did for the New Orleans Saints last year, to come in and have the type of success that he's having again because of the amount of attention you receive from your performance in the years past. And when I asked Logan Wilson, do you think Trey Hendrickson's playing as one of the best defensive ends in the NFL? He said, yeah, and it's because of his motor. His motor is what separates him. And he said, he's got a great skill set. And when you combine it with the fact that all Trey Hendrickson wants to do is work and how much his motor drives him, that's why he's having the type of success. And he and Sam Hubbard, they make that defensive line go up front.
So I'll need to go through my game notes farther, but I just kind of browsed back through it. How many drives Hendrickson was responsible for ending? Like the opening drive, he gets the pressure on Goff, forcing him to scramble, get outside the pocket. Later in the game, he gets Sewell to commit a holding call. Later in the game, Hendrickson gets the other tackle to commit a holding call. I think there were like 4, 5, or 6 times where Hendrickson just ended a drive. To keep the basketball analogies going, like that's like a shot blocker. The Lions tried to get something going. They often were having 3rd and long, and Hendrickson was the reason it didn't work. It takes a lot for a defensive end to do that. The Bengals or any defense just relies on that. I think pass rusher is the most valuable, edge rusher specifically, is the most valuable piece of any defense. And the Bengals have one, again, because Hendrickson's doing it so consistently too. On a game-in, game-out basis, that's what gives you confidence that this can be more consistent. He's done against a lot of different styles of tackles, and he's just winning matchups on a game-by-game basis. It's really, honestly, surprising and impressive to see him step up into this number one role for the first time in his NFL career.
Yeah, he's been impressive. And I think what stands out to me most about this defensive performance today is, yes, they were playing the Lions, and I don't know if you agree with me, but I officially think the Lions are the worst team in the NFL. I was asked that in a roundtable heading into the game this weekend. Did I think that the Lions or the Jacksonville Jaguars were the worst team in the NFL? And I said the Lions, because after watching Trevor Lawrence play the Bengals on Thursday Night Football, I at least gave him the nod over Jared Goff. My thoughts were concerned with what I saw from the Lions today. They just look brutal at almost every single position. But you didn't see any major blown assignments. You just didn't see anything really that was alarming to you on defense. And I think that's the sign of when you can tell a defense is really player-led and that they're consistently focused on being a dominant group week in, week out, because we haven't quite seen a performance where they don't look like the same defense we've seen. They consistently do the right things. They don't look like there's no blown assignments with this defense. And I think it's important to talk about it because that is the signs of a mature player-led defense. And I think you can tell whether it's Jesse Bates and Von Bell in the backfield with Logan Wilson in the middle and then them having those guys up front. I don't think that there's going to be a game that you're going to feel let down by the Cincinnati defense.
And I get the counterpoint that they did against Detroit, a team with literally no wide receivers, their 2 best linemen hurt, and a quarterback who doesn't look long for Detroit. But like, here's the thing, like, the 2019 Bengals, a very bad team. They only scored single digits once, and I'm going to give the Bengals defense credit for holding the Lions to single digits today, because really they only allowed 3 points when the first string defense was in the game. The Bengals in 2019 only scored single digits once, and that was against the Steelers, who at the time were playing at an incredibly high level. It was in that blowout 27-3 Thursday night game, and Monday night game. And just think back to that game. It was week 4 at Pittsburgh, primetime. Dalton is one of the worst games of his career. Think about how demoralizing that game was from a Bengals perspective, and how much of a gap it felt like there was between the Bengals at the bottom of the league and the Steelers. Well, now there's that size gap between the Bengals on the positive end and another team. So even though the Lions are bad, you know how hard it is to have that type of performance against any type of team.
Yeah. So an impressive win, because the Bengals were able to get themselves out of the funk on offense, and defensively played consistent all game long. And at the end of the day, a win's a win, and the Bengals are 4-2, sitting atop of the AFC North. And before we get into the details of the matchup, Charlie, what are you looking forward to most about this Baltimore-Cincinnati matchup that's going to take place next week?
Man, there's so much to talk about. Like, the Ravens blew out the Bengals twice last season, and the two biggest schematic problems virtually all season was they couldn't stop Lamar Jackson as a mobile quarterback, who also is a great thrower on the run, and they couldn't pick up the Ravens' zero blitz, really. Remember the whole zero blitz Jaguars thing? Burrow took pride in that, because the Jaguars hired the Ravens' defensive coordinator, who basically ran the same scheme. So the Bengals had no answer really last season for the Ravens' offense or the Ravens' defense. They took specific steps schematically and roster construction-wise, specifically with the idea for getting better in those two areas. And here's the test. Here's the look at how much better the Bengals are and what they were worst at last season.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. There's going to be great matchups across the board, and we will get into all of those on Thursday when we have a new episode of the Bengals Beat podcast. But we just wanted to recap this game. Charlie, Sam, and I are headed back from Detroit to Cincinnati right now. So we appreciate you guys tuning in, and we will be back on Thursday to get you set for what's going to be an exciting Week 7 matchup between the Bengals and the Ravens.